live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. This is Breakthrough Thinking. I'm Dave Isaac, the host. And if it is the second Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4, Understanding Autism, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. Welcome back, Paul. You were just here. Kim, welcome. Oh, where'd you go?
Hi.
There you are.
There's
your voice.
Here I am.
Okay. Hey, you got new glasses.
They're not new. I just don't wear them as often as I'm supposed to, but
I feel a lot better
when I wear them because my eyes don't strain.
Have you seen her in glasses?
I've seen her in glasses.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I've seen her in those glasses or not.
Really?
I don't pay attention to that kind of thing.
That's true.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I see a Google Glass. Oh, that's
no.
Not a Google Glass. Anyway, so Understanding Autism, of course, every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, live through the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. And today is important. It's in December. It's holiday time. Holidays and autism, I'm sure there's a lot to talk about, a lot of learnings, a lot of things that you can suggest to keep the already potentially stressful holiday season to a happy, healthy, harmonious season.
That would be great. I know. It is. It's a busy season under the best of circumstances. And then when you have a child with autism or you have autism yourself, it can become go from busy to stressful beyond measure because of all the chaos and things that are happening. You know, people are used to having, you know, schedules, you know, whether it's being in school. If your child's in school, they have a daily schedule and set times for things and stuff like that. And then Christmas time comes and you have this two-week block that's not your normal routine. It's not your normal schedule. And not only that, it's not normal for your not normal. How did I say that?
Because
then you have all these other activities that you wouldn't be doing, even if you didn't have things scheduled, so different than anything you would have been doing, having more people, more things in the house, you know, light, sound, smells, all kinds of things. And so it's definitely the contrast, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But so, you know, being that there is so many things going on, it's really important for people to take the time to think about that ahead of time and do some planning and scheduling of what you know would be the unstructured time. Because, you know, kids on the spectrum have difficulty with not knowing what's going to be happening in their day. You know, having change, just change itself, something that they're used to. You know, the first Monday comes where it's the first vacation Monday and they're not going to school. You know, it's going to be surprising to them, might upset them because they didn't know. And so it's important to take the time to plan and also to talk to your child and show them what the alternative schedule is going to be and include them, you know, in picking out some things that they want to do. You know, one thing I have families do is they sit down and they do that. They write out a calendar, and, you know, there are some things maybe that have to be set into the family day, and then there's, you know, free time spots. And just, you know, sitting with your child and having them participate, you know, in some of what the schedule is going to look like is going to be helpful for them. So they get to be a part of things, and then they also have an idea of what's going to be going on, you know, during the time that's going to be different for them.
So you mentioned a couple words, at least one word, unstructured time, which I suspect is similar to lack of a routine, is often on the show Understanding Autism. It's very important that there is a routine to help predict what's coming up to make people on the spectrum a little more comfortable?
Yeah, well, having routines and schedules is comforting to a person on the spectrum in that, you know, they know what's going to happen. They have some ideas in their mind of what to expect, and it just minimizes the anxiety levels, you know, when you have a clue. When you don't, you know, there's a lot for someone to process when things come up that are unexpected. And for someone that has difficulty processing information and doing it quickly, you know, the unexpected could cause a lot of anxiety and stress. And so that's one reason it's really important, you know, in general throughout the year to have some sort of schedule that your child can count on. But in the times where there's vacation times or times that are going to be completely different, it's a good idea to plan, you know, make adjustments for those times.
Now, is there a difference, either one can answer, Paul or Kim, in terms, if someone's on the spectrum, or when someone's on the spectrum, the age has something to do with it. I know probably there's a minimum age, you know, I mean, obviously if you're an infant or something, you haven't had much opportunity to learn a lot. But is there, the older you get, is there any correlation between age and comfort level, or age and growing out of wanting to or being able to operate in an unstructured environment?
I wouldn't say the correlation is directly with age. It's with developmental state, and developmental state usually advances as age advances, but since everyone in the autism spectrum is developing sort of at a different rate, then, you know, one 20-year-old and one 30-year-old, the 20-year-old may be more flexible than the 30-year-old because he's less impaired, or he's received therapy that's better helped him, or addressed his impairments better than the 30-year-old has. So there can be some correlation with age, but a lot of it is just going to depend on the actual development state and what they've learned to deal with. I would say one thing about the schedule is that, for me, it's not just the schedule. Like, a schedule isn't comforting in a lot of cases for me. But the predictability is often comforting, but predictability gives me a degree of control, and it's the control that's really comforting, that I have the ability to make plans of my own, because I know that, you know, this area, everyone is, you know, free or whatever. So it's not so much the schedule as that the schedule means a decrease in unpredictability. And a lot of times the schedule can bring more stress, because if you're saying we're doing this and I'm like, I don't like doing that, you know, then I have that countdown to the time when we're doing it and I've got a stressful period leading up to it. So a lot of it, you know, it may be the schedule helps, but you still need a lot of care in putting together the schedule, in not making one that's going to make things worse. That, you know, I talked about with my parents, or did I talk about with you, that I need a lot of time before something. So, like, if I have something scheduled at 2, then for me, my time stops being free about noon, maybe even 11, because get into things that most of my leisure activities, playing games, reading books, whatever, the things that really call me, I need to do them in a big block, an hour and a half to 2.5 hours of just getting into it and getting lost in it, for it to really have a positive effect on me. So if I have something scheduled at 2, I know that once I hit 11, I can't really start doing anything seriously relaxing to me, because I won't be able to stop it, or it'll be interrupted by the thing that I have to do. So, you know, knowing how someone recovers and knowing, you know, what about time use really causes stress for them, whether it's the structure, whether it's what they do, whether it's whether or not they get free time, those things are really important to putting together a useful schedule. And, you know, when you go to, you know, a family event or whatever, communicating about that schedule with everyone else, saying, you know, okay, you know, if we want to do something, we really need to let him know at least 3 hours in advance that we're planning this, because, you know, for most people, an hour in advance for a change of schedule is enough, but for him, it will be really frustrating if you don't give him that, you know, far enough warning that he can plan around it.
I just want to say, too, I think Paul brings up a good point from the standpoint of teens and adults. It is a good point to see. Some younger kids, they respond to the schedule really well because they don't have the ability to plan things for themselves, and sometimes they need to be directed, or they just get bored and frustrated because they can't plan things for themselves to do. So I think it's important to be mindful of, you know, of knowing the individual you're doing this for, and thinking, you know, tends to be the younger children, they do need more structure and activities planned for them, whereas Paul's saying, you know, for him, that it's not just the schedule, it's that element of control. And I think that moves into, you know, maybe not so much the little kids, but maybe as you get older and some of the adults is accounting for that too.
Yeah, I think for the little kids, it may not necessarily be the element of control, but predictability. For me, you know, the control and predictability are intertwined, but for them, it's like, but they still may have the issue of, like, if you say you've got free time for 2 hours, that knowing far enough in advance that it's going to change is still be really important.
Yeah.
So understanding how they interpret that schedule and what about that schedule comforts them will help you pick a better schedule.
Right, and that's why it should be, you know, obviously these tips we give is to spark ideas for you to apply to your specific, you know, child. Everybody's different. but the concepts are relevant, you know, things to consider and think about.
So let me ask you a question, Paul, because that's interesting to me. So you need a certain time frame. If you know you have to do something, let's say at 2, you might stop at 11 doing the things that relax you, whatever it is, games. So between 11 and 2, what is it like then?
Well, here's the thing is I might not stop at 11. I just can't start after 11. Because, see, since I might be doing it, you know, since I might need 2 hours to do it, if I started it at 10:30 or whatever, I might stop at, like, you know, 1:30 and still have...
Gotcha. So you're okay with that.
Yeah. It's just, it gives me the opportunity to make sure that I don't have to interrupt myself, that I don't get too deep into something, that it becomes more stressful stopping it than the stress I was trying to relieve by doing it. So it allows me the ability to make that kind of planning that I couldn't make.
Which is good. That's good planning, I think.
And that's sort of it. I mean, you know, other people would say, you know, like, okay, well, I wouldn't start watching a movie because movies are long and you don't interrupt movies. But people see books as something easier to put down. But for me, it's not the same with
a book.
So it's, you know, a lot of people do this kind of thing, strategy with a lot of things, that you don't start something that you know is going to take a long time.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a craft project and you can't let the paint dry until you've finished it, then you don't start it unless you have enough time to finish it because you don't want to interrupt it and have to start all over.
Bottom line is it's good to have a strategy,
It's good to have a strategy.
Yeah.
And so, but for me, it's a different kind of thing that I need that time for, things that people wouldn't normally consider a 2 or 3 hour thing. And so it's just one of those things that, you know, and I really only became aware of it relatively recently, that that's really what frustrates me when schedules change, is that, you know, that it often adds, you know, when I know someone's likely to change a schedule on me, then I have, you know, I have to plan for maybe the whole day to be don't do anything big, because I'm like, well, they might change it, they might need to be earlier, whatever, I don't know what's going on, it's really frustrating.
You know how valuable that is to know, you know, with anyone, but also, you know, obviously people on the spectrum, the caregiver, the parents, the therapist, the specialist. Kim, how valuable is that to know your individual person you're working with?
That's
got to be amazing.
Well, it's everything, and that's what really separates, I think, you know, professionals, the levels of their effectiveness. You know, there's a lot of general knowledge about autism, and everybody's different. You know, and hearing Paul talk about this, I've seen, you know, I've heard him say it about him, and I've heard a couple of other people say it. But everybody also is different. So there's the commonalities of things that affect them, and then there's also these, you know, differences. And I just think it's important to get to know the person and get to understand what their challenges are, you know, within these topic areas we talk about, like, you know, needing structure and things like that. You know, obviously there's this commonality of structure that is beneficial to people on the spectrum, and then learning how, you know, and what's beneficial on the individualized level, I think, is extremely, extremely important.
So, you know, I think, and really great credit to Paul to be able to understand that strategy himself. I mean, whether you're on the spectrum or not, I don't know a lot of people that even understand themselves well enough. Like I said, whether it's spectrum or not, that means you understand the theory and practicality of a strategy to make life work well.
And that's one of those things that becomes the real challenge with autism, is that often the person on the autism spectrum isn't going to have the level of realization that I have. It took me 31 years and, you know, 8 years of knowing
it's
about
evolving.
Autism, and even then it's just the beginnings of one. But a lot of times that strategy is more necessary for someone with autism than a normal person. Mm-hmm. So a normal person can recover from having their recovery time interrupted, can pick it up again later mentally, and someone with autism often can't recover from changes as easily. So not only does it need to be known for the person with autism, but it needs someone else to know it in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
But it requires someone who is observing to be able to spot and pick up what they need to be able to recover. And, you know, say, okay, you know, at family events, you know, we need to make sure that they get this much time in one block each day to be able to recover, rather than, you know, an hour here or there, you know, or really understand, like, what it is that your kid needs to remember. Maybe they need to run outside in the cold air for an hour, or maybe they need to sit in a quiet room for an hour, or maybe, you know, they just need 5 minutes at a time, like, you know, but that 5 minutes at a time has to be screaming, you know, that it can be very different for each person. But figuring out what it is and how to plan around it is sort of key in making a good schedule.
And also working with them on, you know, how to kind of explore and experiment what does work for them. Because a lot of times people don't know. Paul is more unique in the way that he's you know, his thinking about himself and what works for him has evolved, and it continues to evolve. And a lot of people on the spectrum aren't there or anywhere close to being there yet. But the important part is to help someone to start the process of learning about themselves and exploring and experimenting with what, you know, may or may not work. Because you would ask someone what would help you feel better, and they're going to say, well, they may not know.
Yeah.
And I think for a while, I remember we've talked about some things, and that was your answer at one time for certain things. And I think helping them just to try things and, hey, does this work? Does it not? Okay, what did we learn? Let's try this. You know, there's a lot of exploring that that goes on to help a person, you know, create systems to help them to self-regulate and manage situations that are, you know, overwhelming or just daily situations. So,
you know, you mentioned, I think Paul mentioned it, well, you both sort of mentioned it, but you took a potential opposite approach where sometimes being unstructured may create comfort. And when you said that, and I think follows you, and typically it's structure that creates comfort when you're on the spectrum. But, when I was thinking about public speaking.
I think for the little kids. I think that's where I was thinking.
Well, okay.
And what I had was structured, unstructured time. Because, you know, it's
yeah.
time where I know it's open for me.
Right.
Gotcha.
So it's sort of, it's like I said, it's sort of a matter of control. And when you aren't the one making decisions, then it's helpful to have someone else in control. But it's in both cases, it's avoiding unpredictability. For me, you know, I'm making the decisions to what I'm doing. For them, their parent is making the decisions. But it's avoiding unpredictability for both of us. And that's sort of...
Okay, so that can...
It's a degree of predictability.
So avoiding unpredictability can be discomforting.
No, it can be comforting.
No, it is comforting.
Okay, avoiding...
Unpredictability can be discomforting.
Okay, gotcha.
Right.
Now, what's interesting, when you said that, something clicked, and we'll see, get your both your comments on this, is that when I do public speaking, like whether it's a seminar, workshop, or whatever I'm doing, is that I find I'm more comfortable when it's completely unpredictable.
Wow.
Completely. When it's not structured at all.
Not for me.
Yeah, and let me explain why, and then maybe you guys can comment and see how this relates or not. But when I feel that I have to say lines and do this, almost word for word or whatever it is, I feel confined and closed in. But if I could improvise and just go around that line, I still get all the stuff done, but I do it in an unpredictable way, I feel totally free and
that's
like,
interesting.
Yeah, so I guess that's a little different than...
Here's the thing.
Yes.
I still see that as not unpredictable because you've decided to do it a certain way.
Right.
Now, other people would say, okay, by making it predictable, you specifically pick set things to say. But you have made it predictable by coming up with set ideas to talk about.
That's true.
And you're using your skills. It's like... something doesn't come predictable just by doing it a specific way, but by doing it the way that you are most confident in doing it.
He is so good.
I know.
I'm not kidding.
I
never thought of that. Paul, thank you.
He's good at clarifying, articulating, and convincing.
Nice.
But it's important to understand things like this.
Oh, yeah.
If someone's trying to create predictability,
right.
And they're doing it by creating new stressors and new requirements that, you know.
Very nice.
That predictability is something that is a filter you view the world through. So you see the world and you say, this is predictable because I can handle it.
Yep.
And so if it's, you know, meaning those things, then you're saying you're stressed because you might miss a point on your outline or you might do it out of order and then you have to go back to it and things get lost. That's unpredictable because you know that your ability to follow an outline is less predictable than your ability to ad-lib.
Yeah. Nicely said. I like that a lot. That totally makes sense.
Well, I relate to it really well because I prefer to have less structure when I'm going to talk to something. I prefer to go in with enough planning to know the points I want to hit, but not how I'm going to move between them or necessarily what's going on.
And I'm kind of the opposite.
So we've
really?
Had talks about that already.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. But, I was thinking maybe we could take a short break because I have some questions from listeners that I wanted to share.
Excellent.
So maybe we could take a short break and come back to that.
Yeah, let's take a quick break. This is Understanding Autism every Monday and Tuesday of each month.
Second Monday and Tuesday.
Second. I always forget the second. from 3 to 4. And starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. And we'll be right back after these.
Money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Beerenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Understanding Autism live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. Very cold Phoenix, Arizona, by the way. 36 degrees yesterday, last night. And, of course, every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, it is Understanding Autism, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. We're talking about autism and the holidays. And if you want to hear a replay of the show, go to breakradioshow.com, click on Archives, Understanding Autism. Here's some of the great insights that we have already covered. Now, you have some questions, Ms. Kim.
I have questions from listeners.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. See, we've done this. We touch on the holidays every year on our shows, and last year we had a lot of tips, and we still have a lot for today, too. But something different this year is I actually have had listeners ask me about some things that are related to the holidays, so I'm excited. The first one is a question from a mom. And she says, every year we have family over for dinner. It is very hard to entertain guests. My son needs a lot of help eating, and he cannot speak, so he isn't able to be involved in conversations. I feel like I don't have an opportunity to socialize with our guests and feel separate from the family, as my son needs so much help. And she wants to know what suggestions we might have for that. And I think that's a really interesting question. And we didn't really talk about anything like this last year. So I know there are a lot of parents out there that have kids that have a lot of needs. So, you know, whether it's physical, they can't feed themselves, they need help, you know, moving around, or who can't talk and participate in what the family is doing. And it is stressful for families because they want to make sure their child is taken care of and they want to make sure, you know, they're entertaining their guests that they're having at their house. And one thing that came to mind is the idea of planning a little, almost like a little schedule for the helpers in the family. So let's say mom is going to do, you know, an hour making sure that she's going to be the support person for the son, and then decide maybe dad's going to be the support person. And then, you know, if there's any other family members that are appropriate to add in there. But everybody has a chance to be engaged with the family and can relax and know that the child is being taken care of and supported. You know, they're going to be eating. So that it doesn't just fall on one family member. And I think it's important to plan that ahead of time because on the fly there's, you know, people start talking, and I don't know how many guests are over, you know, at this family's house, but it can be stressful, you know, knowing you're responsible for these people you invited, you need to feed them, you need to entertain them, and, you know, not having a plan for the person that needs you the most, you know, would be very stressful. So I would suggest maybe having a family meeting before the event and talking about, you know, who's going to be, you know, the point person at different times in the event. And that way you know, again, you can just relax when your guests get there and know you have that plan in place. And also, you know, maybe not just planning for that piece, but, you know, planning out any other things that need to be done so that, you know, everybody can have, you know, I guess a minimal stress level, things that need to be done before the party, you know, having that family meeting and including, you know, everybody can pitch in and sort of help get things ready so that you can relax and enjoy. And as far as, you know, having a child who's not able to speak, and, you know, that's tough because people primarily, you know, socialize through conversation. You know, some things I've had families do is think about in advance, you know, games they could play that don't require necessarily a lot of talking. You know, you can play charades, you can color, you know, Christmas coloring together. There's a lot of things people can do together that don't necessarily require a lot of conversation. And if you have a family member who's not able to have conversations, it's a good idea to think about, you know, an activity or two that you can all do together so that that child feels like they're still able to be part of, you know, the party and the festivities. You know, Paul, do you have any additional thoughts on that?
I interpreted the question a bit more narrowly just because when I heard it, she was talking about feeding her child, and I was thinking about just the situation around the dinner table. And I was thinking about maybe reframing feeding your child as something from something you do at the dinner table while everyone else is eating to part of the preparation. Because usually, you know, before everyone gathers at the dinner table, you're still preparing food and getting everything ready, is maybe before inviting everyone else to sit down and eat, if you're the one who's primarily in charge of preparing the food and everything, is maybe sit down with your son and start feeding him a little early before everyone else comes together at the table, so that he's finishing up eating as everyone's sitting down and gathering, and then you can be part of the dinner conversation a little more comfortably because you're not splitting attention between the conversation and the act of helping your child eat.
Yeah, no, that's another good idea. And that would depend, I don't know the specifics, if they want the child at the table eating with everybody or if it would be okay in that family to have him away for that. But that's another good, it's another good potential idea depending on, you know, how, you know, how they want to eat as a family. I know some families, it is important that they're all together and they don't want to exclude the child, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's that kind of tricky area. So I think that's a really good idea as well.
Let me, you have other questions, or if not, I have a question.
Well, I do have other questions,
yes.
But I just wanted, do you have any ideas, actually, for
I like your ideas.
Yeah.
No, they're very good. There's
okay.
No doubt. And again, this is part of being taking a proactive approach, isn't it?
It is.
Planning,
I think it's really important.
Strategies, and that helps comfort.
And I think sometimes for families, like reading about this and thinking about having people over, you know, sometimes this is just one of the very few times during the year where people have, you know, guests over to their home when they have a child with autism. A lot of times families shy away from that. You know, it makes them uncomfortable or they feel like, you know, even maybe like embarrassed if their child's not able to do what they think people would expect. And so I think it would be easy to forget throughout the year that, you know, a situation like this comes up and you're not able to socialize until that moment. You're like, oh, yeah, last year I wasn't able to, you know, to eat or to socialize because of this. And so if you start thinking ahead of time about, you know, maybe the challenges you had last year, you can brainstorm ahead of time, you know, based on whatever the challenges were and figure out a plan to make this year go a little bit better.
Very good. And that will help, of course, in a stressful time anyway, for some families.
Yeah.
The holidays.
Yeah.
And that was my question. I'm going to ask it now, but you can answer it later or now if it's appropriate. Is stress contagious? In other words, if the family is stressed, those on the spectrum, do they pick up that stress?
I have definitely seen that to be a yes in some situations. Because what they know of their parents to be like, you know, how they respond and what they do is different, and they don't know why it's different. You know, they're not necessarily considering the things that we are, like, you know, are they mad at me? You know, are they frustrated with me? It could just be a matter of, no, they're just, you know, they're rushing around, and that's not always interpreted, you know, accurately by a person on the spectrum. So I think it would cause a lot of confusion and stress for some people.
So is the opposite true? If do you, part of what you would recommend is if you can be self-contained, if you can be peaceful within yourself, stress-free as a goal in life, stress management, does that help people on the spectrum?
I would say yes, but I would phrase it a little differently. Is, you know, I think taking the time to think about, you know, situations and interactions ahead of time. And that doesn't mean, you know, obsessive thinking, but considering, and it will help you to be in a more regulated, self-aware place. And when you're in that place, you're able to make better decisions.
Okay.
And I think that's really what, I mean, stress is a natural part of life to varying degrees for everybody. There's always going to be stress, but it's more how you think about it and the choices you make than just stress, nobody's stress-free.
But it is an opportunity for parents as another avenue to keep the peace.
Yeah, I mean, it's important that parents realize that they should feel like they can enjoy the holidays. I mean, I know some people go into the holidays thinking, well, here we go, it's just going to be work and stress. And, you know, there is work and there is stress, but there's also ways to, you know, think about it where, you know, it's important that you enjoy yourself, and also, you know, you are a role model for your kids, whether you realize it or not, or whether they're saying anything or not. So how you respond to social situations is important. You know, having some, you know, calm, some peace in your heart, you know, and how you communicate and how you operate is going to be valuable on some level to them, you know, that way too.
Very good. So another good good advice to give to the listeners. And you have more questions?
Yes. Well, I have a question. And actually, Paul, this might be a good one for you to chime in on. It's from an adult with ASD, and he writes, he's been invited to a holiday party. I would like to socialize but get overwhelmed easily and become embarrassed about this. How can I enjoy being around people when I cannot keep up with everything going on? I don't want to be alone, but haven't found a way to make it okay for myself. I have gone to these types of parties in the past and ended up exhausted for days afterward. Then I get depressed.
You know, that's a challenging one because I don't know how well I would handle a holiday party, and I know that I don't think it's possible to avoid the exhaustion. I don't think that that should be something to worry about, and if possible, I wouldn't be depressed about the exhaustion because it's sort of a natural thing. What I would try to do for the party is, you know, if you've been invited to it, then hopefully someone who knows you invited you, and maybe you can bring another friend along if you've got. Basically, I would try to have a wingman in attendance, someone who would I would mostly be around for most of the party so that when I am socializing with other people, if I can't carry the conversation, I have someone who's used to me not being able to carry the conversation and can sort of chime in my stead and make the conversation natural by them. So, you know, no one-on-one conversions. Every conversation is at least three people so that those two people can talk when I'm not able to carry on. So hopefully, you know, find someone who can make it a more comfortable experience for me and who's used to being around me so it's not an uncomfortable experience for them. If I couldn't find a person like that, I think that I would just, I mean, I would be quiet a lot. You know, there are quiet people. There are introverts, and people are used to having them around. But, you know, there's not an obligation to speak. If someone says, hi, how are you doing? I mean, obviously, it's nice to respond politely. But, you know, I would generally look for conversations that are already going on, groups of people that I can join in with without being in a one-on-one situation. So I would just generally try to avoid one-on-one so that there isn't a burden on me to keep things going.
I think that's a really good idea, and I have something else that occurred to me while I was hearing you talk about that. Well, two things. One is, you know, I think it sounds like from this question that this listener feels is putting a lot of pressure on themselves to maybe be a certain way. And, you know, just be yourself. It's okay to be yourself. And you know what, if that means, you know, maybe the length of the party is too long, it's okay to go home early or it's okay to come late. You know, it's okay to do things that are going to help you to feel like you're getting something out of it. Because, you know, a lot of times, and I've heard this from, you know, other adults that I work with, they'll go through these motions socially, but they're not getting anything out of it. Not only is it exhausting, but it's not enjoyable for them. And so I think it's important to really consider your comfort level and know that your comfort level is important. And, you know, to communicate. And, again, if somebody invited you, they do have some sense of who you are. And, you know, it's okay to communicate with people about, you know, like it's okay to leave early if you need to and just be polite about it and, you know, make sure and say goodbye to people and stuff. But it's okay, I guess, to adjust, you know, your choices with what you really need. And people, you know, who do know you, if you know, that is the case, they're going to understand that, you know, so.
You know, I think even people, those not on the spectrum, is sometimes when you feel, you go in and you go, wow, I got to talk and, you know, to people, and it is draining, I think, is what Paul said.
Yeah,
it can be exhausting.
So.
And you know, it's always a little bit of a dilemma, and Even if you're able to carry a conversation on, it's still like, you know, can't I just sit down and relax?
Yeah.
But then it might be perceived as rude, so you want to
right.
engage. And so I'm not sure the answer there either, whether on the spectrum or off the spectrum, except maybe reframe it and, you know, say, well, you know, maybe I can enlighten people. Maybe I can bless people. Maybe I can do
something.
And here's
another thought that just occurred to me, too, is, you know, because this listener said, I don't want to be alone, especially on the holidays. You know, there are alternatives to parties, too. You know, maybe if you'd feel more comfortable, you don't want to be alone, maybe invite a friend to go do something holiday-related. You know, you can, or you have a party that you design,
yeah.
you know, the way that's going to be comfortable for you. And so, I think that a lot of times what I've seen with adults is they put a lot of expectations on themselves and they're afraid because they don't want to be misunderstood and they don't want to get into arguments or, you know, things like that. And, you know, I think just thinking about yourself and doing things that, you know, are going to be good for you are going to go better because you're not going to have that tense, you know, those tense feelings and stress hanging over you to where you're not even going to enjoy being with people, you know. So just, I think, too, to just be a little bit, like, kinder to yourself and realize, you know, it's okay. It's okay to make adjustments if you need to help yourself.
Good advice, both of you.
So I like that question. I particularly am sensitive to that because I do work with a lot of adults, and I know that this time of year can be really hard, you know, for them, especially with, or, you know, even, or the other aspect of this is not being invited to parties. You know, in the past I've heard a couple of people I've worked with, you know, they've in their jobs and stuff, they've heard that their parties went on that they weren't invited to, and they didn't know how to handle that. And it was, I mean, there's just, you know, it's a tough situation because of how difficult it is to relate to others that aren't on the spectrum. I mean, we're thinking about things differently. We're processing things differently. But, you know, it's important to just be who you are and learn about who you are so that you can make steps that are going to be best for you.
Good advice.
So, and then I do have a comment. This isn't a question, but I thought it was really, really sweet, so I wanted to share it. This is actually from one of the young adults that I work with. And I was asking him in preparation for this show, I said, you know, tell me about your experience of the holidays. What do you really enjoy? What's hard for you? Things like that. And what he said was, and he's 23, he said, I like to be included in the process of things, whether it's helping decorate, chopping vegetables, on any level that I can. I want to be a part of things because it makes me feel good knowing I can do something even though I can't do everything. So I thought that was really cool because it just reminded me that it is important to, you know, include your children in something to, you know, at their level of ability that they can be confident and not just leave them out because they can't do the whole thing. You know, they can do something. And another thing he expressed to me was how much he loved the holidays and he didn't think his parents knew that. And I asked him why he thought they didn't know, and he said, well, I don't tell them. And I said, well, why don't you tell them? And he goes, it doesn't occur to me to tell them. But then he wonders why they don't know. So it was just interesting, though. But I guess the point that I got from that is he's having a lot of feelings of happiness and excitement about the holidays. And I think it would be easy for someone who's not maybe the greatest communicator or who's nonverbal, who wouldn't be able to express it, just to consider the fact that your kids may be having a lot of strong feelings about the holidays, but either they're not able to tell you or it's coming out in ways, you know, just to remember that they're likely, you know, having opinions and things, and just to take the time either to ask, you know, ask them what their thoughts are and what they're enjoying or what they'd like to do, you know, just including them in things I think is really important.
Let me ask you, when he said it didn't occur to him to ask them, at some point it occurred to him that he was curious about it. Would that be the point he could have asked them? Or?
The
fact that he made a comment that I'm not sure my parents realize how I like the holidays because it didn't occur to them to ask them, right?
Well, he and I were talking about things,
oh.
I triggered that idea.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't know.
I was curious.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
But I thought that was interesting. It kind of needed to remind him that, you know, it's a good thing to share. So people, they understand you better if you express it. But it just reminded me, I mean, this individual, he can talk. You know, he can actually do the act of speaking, but he has difficulty expressing what he really feels and thinks. And it's easy to forget or just assume that, oh, they don't care, they're not interested, because they're not giving you that feedback. So when he said that, I thought, wow, I was surprised. I didn't realize how strongly he felt about things until I sort of really investigated more. So, you know, if you're a parent, I think it's important if you're not getting a lot of feedback, you know, to ask and just, you know, and it's okay if they don't have opinions on things. Like I'll tell my students, it's okay if you don't have an answer. I'm just curious, you know, what's your favorite part about the holidays? What would you like to see the family be doing? What don't you like to do? You know, are there any foods that you want to add to our holiday dinner? You know, just including them in the process because sometimes they don't think that they can contribute or that it would matter.
So the way you ask the question is important. I noticed how you were doing that. Be somewhat specific. What part do you like? What part don't you like?
Yeah,
so
definitely
you don't wanna,
be specific.
Yeah.
And also always, I always give the option or just that disclaimer of it's okay if you don't know. Because sometimes you'll ask them something and they might feel bad that they don't know. It's okay not to know. There's nothing wrong with not knowing. So I kind of remind them of that, but I'm just curious because I want to learn about you. So, and I think that might take some of the stress out of it. You know, knowing that not knowing is okay. I mean, it genuinely is okay. So
that's something else you can do. What other questions?
Let me see. Actually, this was another interesting question. This is from a 19-year-old on the spectrum. He would like to be able to give his parents a gift this holiday, but doesn't have a job and cannot drive. He says he has some money saved, and he does want to get his parents something, but he can only get to places if his parents drive him. And the other issue is he's not sure what buy them. So he'd like to be more independent, and he was curious about our ideas.
More independent.
I always have a problem with gifts every year, so I'm probably not very helpful there. I also think that it's sort of convenient being able to move more online. That maybe, you know, if you have money saved up, you know, if it's cash, it can be difficult to spend online. But you might be able to go out, like, ask your parents to help you to go buy an Amazon gift card for yourself at a store, which then you can spend online to buy a gift to have shipped and wrapped for you.
Yeah.
And that can really help with, because then you can have it shipped pre-wrapped from Amazon. They have a wrapping service. And then the gift can remain a surprise. Even if your parents are the ones who get the door and get the gift, it's wrapped so when they receive it, they won't see what it is and everything. So this allows you the opportunity to get a gift. And again, I don't have any good advice for what kind of gift, obviously,
well, yeah.
but it does give you the opportunity to keep an element of a surprise even through the amount of help you might need to receive to purchase it.
That's a really good idea. I hadn't thought of that one. My initial thoughts were, one was that if there was anyone else in the family that you could ask. Again, kind of along the line of thinking, sometimes people don't feel comfortable asking for help or they don't know who they can ask for help. You know, if there's any trusted, close member of your family that you could call and say, hey, I would like to do this. Can you help me? You know, maybe your aunt or uncle or your sibling can drive you. You know, asking for help is okay. And as far as the gift, that is tricky because that involves a lot of processing of different things, perspective taking, kind of knowing what the person already has and doesn't have. And I've been through this process with some of my clients over the years who've wanted to buy their parents gifts. What I would usually say, so what do you want to get them? And their answer is always something that they themselves like. So, whatever that is. And I'll say, well, okay, but remember, we're thinking of that person. What do we know about them? What do we know they like? What do we know they have? And just start that query process. And then, you know, getting some information there. And it's also okay to ask. A lot of people ask each other, you know, what do you want for Christmas? Or, you know, it's okay to ask them. And once you get that information, you then lining it up with your budget, obviously.
And that's another thing Amazon offers, is Amazon offers you the opportunity to put up a publicly viewable wish list.
Mm. I know,
so
I have
you
one.
You can set up a wish list that other people can then use to help decide what gifts to buy you.
Yeah, so maybe that could be something that you do in your family to help support, you know, if you have a teenager, an adult child that has difficulty, you know, picking gifts, maybe that would be something that could be really helpful. But I can really, empathize with this concept, though, the whole independence thing. When you're in that place where, you know, maybe you're not able to get yourself around transportation-wise, whether it's shopping for gifts or just doing other things, it's a tough place to be. But I think you know, asking for help where you can from trusted people and being creative, you know, goes a long way. I like the Amazon idea.
That's a great idea. Excellent.
I just use it to avoid crowds, but, you know.
And see, I do too. I really don't even go shopping anymore, honestly.
You don't?
But I can relate to what
all
this
online
guy is saying, though, because I feel like if you think about it, you know, if you feel like you're dependent, but you have this great idea that you want to be able to do independently, just to feel like a person, like a grown-up person, and you wouldn't, you know, just to feel like you can. And that's one great thing about all this online, you know, shopping and services, and Amazon's my new favorite. So, and no, I'm not being paid to say that. It's not, but I mean, really, I can.
Didn't you tell me you just recently discovered it wasn't all books?
I just recently discovered it wasn't all books.
A lot of stuff, isn't it?
Literally right now at my P.O. box, I have 10 packages that just arrived. it's ridiculous.
Really?
I love it. It's amazing. Amazon Prime. Well, I can't say because some of them are gifts for my fiancé, and he may be listening.
You're engaged? I'm kidding. I knew that. Well, that's exciting.
But anyway, but I just want to say on one more note, though, if you're a parent of a teenager who might be thinking this, just to consider the fact that they do need that independence, too. I know some parents try to remedy it and just say, well, we'll just come with you. It's not a big deal. But it kind of is to them. They want to feel like they have that independence. So just being sensitive to that, you know, and maybe helping them creatively solve that too.
And going back to a previous question, they may not know to ask. They may not know to say, hey, can you ask our aunt to take me shopping so I can buy gifts for you guys or something like that.
Yeah.
That, you know, that you may need to prompt them to see if they want something like this that they hadn't really realized they want or really known how to verbalize.
Right. So I just think remembering that aspect of it, especially for these older guys, is, you know, they have the need for autonomy, but it's very difficult sometimes in their circumstances to feel that, you know, because they are dependent on their parents in ways that they don't want to be necessarily. And so just considering that, and if, you know, even, yeah, opening up the path, it's like some people that I work with, they have jobs, but they aren't able, you know, no transportation, or they don't live on their own and stuff, but they have the job. And so, you know, parents could say, wow, you know, you're earning your own money this year. Would you like to buy gifts for people? You know, we can help you do, you know, just giving them that so they know they have, you know, the power to do that, that they can do things like that, but other people they see around them are doing.
Well, what about perhaps a big enough family, if there's brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, and so on, you know, way earlier than December, maybe start in September.
Well, absolutely. I'm all for planning.
Yeah, just say, hey, you know, you just approach the person on the spectrum, whether it's an uncle, and say, hey, I'm going to, you know, let's make sure we plan to go out and do some shopping together so we can, and I can give you some ideas, and you give me ideas. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Oh, that's my first choice. If people have family that are supportive like that, that's great.
I mean, that would be, and they can plan that. I mean,
and
why not get the family involved, right?
Absolutely. That's always my first hope and choice, is to have family that will do that. And also just, you know, even as sort of a learning and guiding thing, you know, and I've done this. I have some students that I work with just directly, one-on-one therapy, and we talked about this in October. You know, it's like, let's start thinking about your budget, you know, just learning about budgeting and how can I help you with that and what are you thinking about. And, you know, just giving that, the nice thing about planning is you give the individual time to process and think in, you know, in a well-paced way. It's not a rush. It's not December 20th, and they have to make all these fast decisions.
And they don't feel that the family member's obligated. They're approaching someone on the spectrum months and months and months ahead of time.
Right.
Wouldn't that be helpful?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm all for family involvement. That's the greatest wish I wish everybody had. Unfortunately, it's tough because a lot of families don't have that, but I'm definitely a big supporter of that.
Wow. Well, that's great advice. There's no question. And giving that confidence and that feeling of almost belonging, you know, being inside, not outside, probably can do wonders, whether you're on the spectrum or not.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think just because maybe a person on the spectrum doesn't, you know, outwardly show all kinds of social enthusiasm doesn't mean they don't have the need to be, you know, feel connected just on the human level of just being with people and feeling accepted and connected and understood, and, you know, just the basic things in life. You know, it's really important to reach out, and sometimes it's out of people's comfort zones, but it could be a huge step, you know, in the life of someone, just to have someone say, hey, I want to understand you better. I want to learn about you. What do you like? What do you, you know, just reaching out, because so many times, like in therapy, it just seems like we're always trying to get the person to change and do things, and, you know, the family's not always, you know, taking the time to go, well, who is this person? You know, we don't just want to focus on making them a certain way or, you know, this and that, but just, you know, just being with them as people, and not to forget about that in the midst of, you know, trying to help them with good intentions. It's easy to forget some of the main important things in life, just being together and connecting on any way that you can.
Very good point. Any other questions? The listeners.
Those were actually the main questions, and I just want to thank everybody who did submit questions. If you do have any more questions, you can post them on our Facebook page. You know, there's still some time before Christmas, and we're happy to answer those, so feel free to do that.
And let's see, we only have a few minutes left, yet any other final advice? I mean, what you've seen, both of you've seen over the years for holidays, any final wrap-up comments that comes to mind to make this a great holiday season?
Go back and listen to our old shows.
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
I would say the same. I wouldn't have said, I'm stealing that from you, but no, I concur.
I like that.
No, I would say go back and listen and just give yourself the permission to take time to think about things. You know, sit down and ask yourself, how do I want this holiday to go for my family? You know, what do I want to see happen? How can I make it happen?
And don't try to aim for the perfect Christmas.
And
if you try to stress out too much on that, you can end up making it worse than last year. Just try to improve it in one small way, even any bit you can.
Yeah.
And say, okay, we got it better this year. It'll be better again next year.
Definitely.
That's great advice. And, of course, you can hear all the archive shows, breakradioshow.com. Under archives, look under Understanding Autism, breakradioshow.com. And other contact information with you guys. You got a great Facebook thing
going
on.
There at facebook.com/understandingautismradio. So you can get – that's still the best way to get in contact with us. We have understanding-autism.info where we occasionally post blog posts, and we're hoping to do that more. But really, if you want to engage in us with questions and conversation, our Facebook is currently the best way to do it.
Very, very good. And upcoming shows – this is the last show, right, for 2013.
It is.
Can you believe how long? It's been like, what, 3 years now?
I think 2.5.
I think it's 2.5, but I'm not sure. I'm fuzzy on it. I'm bad with time.
Yeah. No, it's,
wow.
It has been a while. It's exciting. We're actually very excited about next month's shows. We're going to be talking, we had a good title, and I don't have it with me, but labels.
Labels.
We're going to be talking about labels.
I love that.
We're going to be talking about them in very constructive ways. And it's very interesting, and Paul's got this. This is like the Paul show.
Oh, the Paul show.
I mean,
yes.
A popular topic right now, especially with the neurodiversity community, is talking about autism as a disorder versus autism as a disability versus autism as just being a person who thinks differently.
Hmm.
So, you know, how we talk about it does affect how people think about it, whether they see us as disabled or as they see us as, you know, sometimes the phrase is differently able, and how that affects our ability to integrate into everyday life. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about my thoughts about these labels, where they matter, where they don't matter, how we can use them constructively, how they get used destructively, and what it means in the life of a person on the spectrum in many cases.
Oh,
and they're really good. I got a sneak preview of this.
Oh, good. And that'll be the second Monday and or Tuesday of January. I'm not sure the exact date.
We're going to have another show about transitions. So we're excited. Next month's shows are going to be really powerful.
Wow.
And, of course, between now and then, we'll be posting on our Facebook. So just because we're not, you know, there's a gap in our shows, be sure to be checking our Facebook because we're posting things frequently.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Paul Loudon. Thank you, Kimberly Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4. You'll hear Understanding Autism. Everyone have a great night. See everyone tomorrow, Breakthrough Sports, Real Hockey Talk, 2 to 4. Have a good night.